Hello, and welcome to the first ever episode of the Beyond Blue podcast. My name is Sam Hewson, and I'm one of the senior cyber and resilience consultants here at Beyond Blue. On today's episode of the podcast, Alicia Waite, who is one of our directors here at Beyond Blue, will be joining Emma Mansfield, the Director of Operational Resilience at Lloyds Banking Group. Today's discussion will touch on all things operational resilience related, looking also at the past, present and future initiatives Beyond Blue and Lloyds Banking Group have been collaborating on in anticipation for the March 2025 operational resilience deadline. So without any further ado, let's dive into the conversation.
So today I'm joined by Emma Mansfield, who's Operational Resilience Director at Lloyds Banking Group. So hi Emma, and thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
It'd be great if we could just learn a little bit more about you. What brings you to Lloyds? What brings you to operational resilience? A bit of a background would be great.
And what a question to kick off with. Certainly not the easiest, and probably one as a point of reflection, I guess. So I entered the world of financial services over 25 years ago, starting off in the branch network of a building society, as it was at the time. So really interacting with customers. And I think through that, they kind of immersed themselves in my DNA. Over the period since, I've worked through the three lines of defence, so second line risk assurance, up to audit, and then back down again to first line and operations, really with that customer mindset and that customer lens. Alongside that, I'm a mum to three girls, and enabling them to see that you can continue to strive through your career with purpose and values is really important to me. I think that's what brought me to Lloyds, the opportunity to deliver operational resilience, putting the customers at the heart of everything that we do, protecting the firm and therefore the sector, given that the oil of the UK economy as we run, was one of those moments where if I were to be sitting on my deck chair looking back on my career and thinking, did I do the right thing? But if I've helped made Britain prosper and delivered on our purpose through delivering operational resilience, I couldn't think of a better place.
No, that is great and really nice background and a bit of an insight into what you're like outside of work as well from a mum's perspective. So it'd be really good to just sort of cover off why we're here today. So Beyond Blue have been really lucky to be working with LBG for a number of years now. So it'd be great if you could just give a bit of a coverage of what the relationship's like.
I wouldn't necessarily call it a relationship, if I may. I refer to it as a partnership. I think we very much work hand in hand and in lockstep, learning from each other, and you've really brought some insightful kind of thought leadership to the table as we've gone forward, and really been supporting the bank through its journey to develop its scenario exercising strategy, which is important in light of the operational resilience regulatory requirements that are in flight and the delivery date of March 2025. You've kind of really listen to what we're seeking to achieve through our resiliency as an organisation. You've really lent in to understand that we want to deliver resilient outcomes for our customers when operational disruptions occur, because we understand that operational disruption will occur. It's not if, it's sadly when that happens, and it's how you respond in those moments, and certainly those moments that matter to your most vulnerable customers when they need it most. And scenario testing plays a key role in testing that response and recovery capability and the minimisation of harm. Now, you've worked with stakeholders across our organisation, really listening and learning and embedding the strategy that we've got in place. And, you know, the regulations mark a step change in the way that we consider it. And I guess for me, operational resilience is a strategic enabler for any organisation as it goes forward. So thank you for being on the journey with us.
No, our pleasure, and completely agree with you on the partnership piece. And we were actually lucky enough to win a Strategy Through Partnership Award with you last year in 2022, which was sort of recognised the work that you've touched on there around scenario testing. So I know we were, I think both parties there were very proud of that. So coming on to scenario testing itself, so obviously we are now, 2 years in from really having the operational resilience policy out on the street. So there are sort of, I'd imagine, quite a lot of lessons learned that we've already had from scenario testing. How would you summarise these?
So first off, I'd probably say that the journey started more than 2 years ago, when I think back to the consultation and the discussion papers, and the fact that it aligned so closely to what organisations were seeking to achieve, both us and many others out there, in delivering those great customer outcomes. I think back to regulation that was treating customers fairly, how that maps through now to kind of consumer duty and that prevention of foreseeable to intolerable harm. And for me, scenario testing really helps us understand a firm's ability to stay within impact tolerance for all its important business services. What do I mean by that? What is an important business service? Surely everything that we do is important. Important business services are those things that are most important to our customers and could cause the most harm if they were unavailable. So the parents stood at the supermarket counter unable to make their payment to buy their food and their groceries for their family. The family sat outside their new home waiting to complete on their mortgage, but the mortgage disbursements aren't available. And you can continue to build the story out. The impact tolerance is how long you could possibly be without that service before that intolerable harm would crystallise. But you need to understand, A, is that the right point of harm? And also, what is your recovery capability to come back within it? And you can only do that by testing it. I think in the earlier days, and I wasn't with Lloyds at the time, but a lot of organisations lent into mapping their assets through their people, whether they're property, technology, data or supply chain, and then testing them kind of through desktop exercises, building on perhaps business continuity that they'd done before, pulling in some of the other strands such as ICAP testing or reverse stress testing that might have been in place to really cement what harm was, what are the vulnerabilities that I need to remediate to be able to recover within that impact tolerance, and then what does my roadmap to ease those look like? And we've continued to mature that. The regulations themselves talk about the requirement to sophisticate and mature the approach to testing. And I think all firms are very much on that journey and leaning into challenging themselves on what is severe but plausible, and when does that move on to be catastrophic, and the implications that come with that. The continuum, as I say, that could potentially take you an organisation over the cliff. So I think we've learnt some important lessons in terms of the need to focus on that end-to-end testing rather than some of the component elements of it, and really understanding what do we mean by severe and what do we mean by plausible.
Yeah, no, completely agree with that. And I think one of the things that we've really seen the organisation sort of excel at, and well, across the industry really, is actually understanding when it comes to scenario testing and recovery, you don't have to recover a perfect service. There are so many different ways that you can still offer the service to customers, which isn't BAU, whether it be through mitigations or workarounds or other things as well. And I think that's been a really interesting journey to go on to get to culturally see that sort of change as people make that realization. One of the really sort of interesting parts around the regulation is third parties. And of course, this isn't the first time that we've seen third parties be the focus from a regulatory perspective, but it is the first time that we're really being asked to look at actually how do you scenario test with third parties? How do you really increase the assurance that you might have over their role within your important business service? Given the sort of upcoming critical third party regulation, which could be out in the next couple of years, how do you think we should be approaching scenario testing with third parties? And as an industry, what approach should we be sort of seeking to achieve?
It's a really interesting conversation because I think we need to take it beyond the boundaries of just third party as well. And you could almost say that your attack vector surface, for example, is much broader than your own perimeter with that regard. I think I'm really mindful, though, that a lot of us or a lot of organisations will have the same critical third parties. So therefore, how do you solve the problem of the many to one versus the one to many? You know, there are various models out there that exist on the market, community tools that provide a level of third-party due diligence. But then what is it that the firm requires on top, and how do you specify that? And, you know, how do you get assurance over if there was to be a breach or a disruptive event? Let's take cyber, for example. When would your level of confidence or your assurance be significant that, for example, you would rely on the reconnection framework versus what your own appetite is internally? So I think it's about building trust and maturity in how we test going forward and what the options are to come together as a sector to really drive that through.
Yeah, no, completely agree. And I do think that there is obviously sort of one policy here, and so you'd like to think that there are a common set of requirements that we could all seek to get from a sort of a collaborative third-party scenario testing regime. But I appreciate that it'll probably take a while for all of us to agree on what that looks like.
And also, you know, there's probably a degree of a journey that third parties need to go on themselves as well to understand what that means to them, and actually how could they provide that outwards into a kind of sell rather than tell conversation.
Yeah.
So opportunities ahead, no doubt.
Oh, definitely. And I'm sure that many of the third parties won't be wanting to set up their own cottage industries having to respond to this. So there is a way of doing this efficiently on both sides of the fence, I'm sure. So looking to sort of some of the challenges that we've seen around scenario testing, we've had many conversations, and this is an ongoing conversation where we're always sort of asking for more guidance from the regulators. But ultimately, one of the big questions is, how severe is too severe? And at what point does the plausibility scale end? What are your sort of insights into where we are with that? You've obviously touched on OCIR and ICAP already, and they're all on these sort of scales, and OPRES fits in somewhere nicely amongst that, but I don't think we're all yet that clear on where we are with that.
Do you know, I was hoping you were going to provide me with the answer then, because you're absolutely right. It is a conversation that continues and continues with momentum, almost with each test that you do or each round of test planning you do, in really challenging that. You know, severe ultimately is, from my perspective, sort of personally, is one of those scenarios that has the potential to drive one or more of your important business services beyond impact tolerance in the absence of any resilience measures or any appropriate controls. So you're almost testing it in its inherent state, if you like, whereas a lot of organisations will have preventative controls, they'll have detective controls. But if they were to fail, if they weren't there, what would it look like, and could it happen? And then you overlay the plausibility. So is it grounded in reality as such that it could be traced to events or near misses? I suppose an example I would give is the pandemic. I know we use it a lot, but I think of pre-pandemic planning versus what we did and what materialised through it and the learnings we carry through to today. Mm. It is plausible. And I think there's the importance of, well, for me, of taking plausibility more broadly than just the sector. But what is it in other sectors that we can learn from? Maersk would be an example of something in the extreme that you should never say never. You know, we can all touch wood and we hope the best, but you need to consider those as you go forward. But I think the line comes in terms of, when does severe and plausible pivot to catastrophic? I think, to your point, that's when the conversation changes.
Yeah, that is definitely where we're not really necessarily having a conversation around continuing important business services. We're actually just talking about survival of the bank, which is a very different conversation. So another question that we always seem to get and always seem to have a conversation about is, when is enough enough? You could scenario test, and you could, I've been there, I can literally come up with millions of scenarios, all slightly different, that will all have a slightly different response requirement to it, and the recovery may look slightly different as well. But at what point, actually, from a value perspective, is enough enough?
I think the question in my head is perhaps slightly different, in the sense that it's not about, do you keep rinse and repeating? Do you keep testing the same thing? Well, you know the answer. Unless you've remediated something, and therefore you want to retest it to see if you can prove it or get assurance over it. It's how do you test, how do you mature and sophisticate your testing going forward that adds real value? How do you test to ensure that you're building resilience by design, so that you're fixing forward into the future rather than looking backwards? And as your organisations change, your product offering might change, the demands of our customers change. So as we move to more digital offerings, potentially as a sector, as more organisations through the sector immerse themselves into a bigger cloud journey, for example, your testing needs to reflect the organisation at that moment in time. So I think it's about how you look at testing rather than rinse and repeat, as I call it.
Yeah. No, completely agree. And one of the key ways that we all know that the regulator wants us to mature is around the concept of simulations or live testing, of which can mean very different things to very different people, depending on who you're speaking to. But you hear a lot of the very new technology firms talk about things like chaos testing and disruptive testing. But ultimately, a lot of those new technology firms they're not providing money to customers, that the services that they're providing or entertainment or something that isn't going to cause a detrimental impact if it wasn't going to be available. So there's always this risk appetite piece within the financial sector when it comes to things like live testing. Do you think it's possible? Do you want to get there? How do you see testing evolving over time when it comes to being slightly more sophisticated?
I think we owe, to your point, and you said it really well there, we always need to balance risk and reward. We are driving operational resilience as a strategic enabling to organisations to protect customers, the firm and the sector from intolerable harm. What you don't want to do is undertake testing that causes intolerable harm. So it's the safety parameters that, and the controls that you have around it that enable you to draw the line within your risk appetite. And, you know, I think as we go forward, the testing will sophisticate it, it will mature, but we just always need to be cognizant of having a resilience mindset, but seeing it through the eyes of the customer as well and protecting them from the ultimate outcome.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I think picking up on your point there around risk and reward, ultimately risk, whilst the operational resilience policy tries to stay as far away as possible from risk and asks us to decouple it when we're talking about scenario testing, for example, so not to necessarily consider likelihood. When it comes to things like the investments that are needing to be made in order to remediate some of the vulnerabilities that come from scenario testing, the risk does come into it. It's always a resilience versus a risk mindset in terms of actually should I be spending and prioritising an investment in one area where the scenario I deem is relatively unlikely, and so therefore it comes back in. How do you think that we need to manage investment decisions when it comes to resilience against that risk side that always is butting in?
It's a challenging weighing scales to balance. I think for me, it's about how organisations build resiliency in as they go forward. So how do you build the business processes, the technology? How do you modernise, ensuring that you've got that underpinning resiliency in place going forward, rather than looking backwards and having to constantly fund backwards in cycles? I think it'll always be a set of scales. That's why it's really important to have appropriate governance and oversight in place in supporting the testing, the test strategy, and even the operational resilience strategy of the organisation. But that's why for me, that resilience culture, that resilience mindset is really important, so that you are enabling people to make appropriate decisions at the right time.
Yeah, and I think it's a really good point. It's a, as you say, it's a focus on becoming more resilient over time rather than trying to point fix issues that you're finding along the way, that actually, if you looked forward and took a strategic view, actually you might build those out anyway.
But the really important thing, I think, as you're doing that journey is to make sure that you've got response capability and proven response capability in place as you go on the journey, because then that allows you to lean more into the recovery space and what you might want to do more strategically versus your tactical.
Yeah, completely agree. I think what it does bring us on to quite nicely, though, is that there's always going to be a set of scenarios that are probably definitely more towards the severe end and the implausible end and bordering on that extreme, but there are always going to be a set of scenarios that we're ultimately never going to be able to stay within impact tolerance for. The thoughts of being able to, you know, get back from a severe cyber attack, for example, in less than a month, and sometimes, to your point about Maersk, it took them several weeks to get back to a point that they were operational. How do you think as an industry we respond to that? How do you think, because it could happen to anyone, right? It could, and we're all so interconnected that it's always going to have a big impact, regardless of whether it's you or it's, you know, the bank over the road, for example.
It is. We're one complex ecosystem, or spider's web, depending on how you'd like to describe us. I think we're all acutely aware that there will be scenarios that will test our recovery capability within impact tolerance, certainly some of the nearer term impact tolerances. I think even the regulator identifies those, because it talks itself around things like failure of UK critical national infrastructure, for example, supply chain attack on major IT vendor, extended failure of financial market infrastructure. And that's in the regulations and in the guidance itself, sort of leaning into that. But we can't walk past it. So if those scenarios did happen, what would we do? And we talk as an industry and some of the industry forums about the optionalities that substitutability would give us. But we know that there's challenges there from a legal perspective, definitely, as well as a regulatory one, and would be considered probably only in a break glass scenario where something was so severe. But personally, from my perspective, it is something that's really important to continue to explore, to continue to have the conversations around what would we do if.
Yeah, no, completely agree. And it's actually, I think, in the industry that we're in, considering it is now so highly regulated, getting people to think in a break glass manner, where actually you might be stripping away some of those regulations and you might be saying, actually, that's not important. It's very hard to get people to think in that mindset whilst not in crisis mode. So yeah, I completely understand the frustrations that might be occurring around an industry approach and how slow potentially it can be.
It is, but we're having to navigate complex legal and regulatory requirements that are also put in place for a really good reason.
Of course, yeah.
And so it's how do you navigate them to get to the right outcome? And at least we've started the conversation, mm-hmm. and that's sometimes the hardest thing to do. And done some exploratory work through some of the industry groups to look at where it could go.
So trying to move away from the sort of very, very severe scenarios and the ones that probably would keeping most of the execs awake at night. Is there anything specific outside of those scenarios that from an operational resilience perspective is a worry be for you, or something that is your real focus?
I thought you were going to ask me what keeps me awake at night, Dan. I was going to say the list is long. Probably due to the fact I have three daughters. I think, you know, the thing that keeps me awake at night is that we can test and we can have controls, preventative, detective, we can have response, we can have recoveries. And how do we make sure that also in a challenging economic, external, geopolitical environment, that we can continue to do the things that we want to do as a sector? And how, with changing customer needs and wants, how do we make sure that we're responding to the right thing? We're responding to the most vulnerable, that actually in the event of a disruptive event, those needs might change and therefore how we respond might change. So it's how do you make sure that you're kind of looking through all the lenses?
Yeah, no, it's a really good point. And it's something that whilst I've been quite heavily involved in the scenario testing space, it's always been an interesting conversation around, you can come up with very scenario specific response and recovery plans, and you can do a huge amount of scenario testing, trying to sort of tick as many boxes as you can in terms of giving yourself comfort. But actually, it is, to your earlier point, very much around the resilient culture of being able to respond to what's happening to you, because sometimes, and most of the time actually, those playbooks aren't going to give you the exact answer. And so it is all around sort of building in, being comfortable in the unknown.
Definitely is interesting, but I think as well, that's why it becomes really important that actually those playbooks are at that more thematic level, mm-hmm. and actually whether it's your customer treatment strategies or your playbooks at large, that they are tested in anger, or where you have a near miss or a horizon scanning event or something that happens somewhere else in the sector or outside, you take those learnings in and you test it and you play it through and using your incident management team. So they get used to that level of uncertainty, that level of complexity. You know, some of these, like you said, could be very long running. So how do you manage it in that situation? What would we do? How would we respond? How would we recover? How would we keep the energy going? How do we keep the focus on the strategic intent of resolving the issue that's happened? And I think that's a journey that we'll be on as a sector, and probably beyond our sector actually for a while.
No, completely agree. Looking ahead then, operational resilience in 5 years, what do you think it will look like and what would you like it to look like?
I think that resilience will be talked about less, but that's a good thing. So I think back 10, 15 years when operational risk started being talked about, or non-financial risk, and it was, how do you layer that into organisations? How do you get them to understand the importance of it and really deliver it in a positive way? And I think we're there, we've matured through that curve. Wouldn't it be great if operational resilience followed the same curve, where it just became part of the DNA, the everyday conversations that were happening around, whether you're in a feature lab whether you're in an operational frontline team, whether you're sat at a group executive level, when you're talking about investment, you're talking about strategy, you're talking about disruption, you're talking about resilience as well as part of your natural conversation. That for me is the sign of we've done this well and we'll continue to do it. And I think that in turn helps us land our purpose. You know, we continue to see customer needs changing, the in-demand moment to move money, to make payments, not between 9 and 5, but sometimes at 5 in the morning or 1 in the morning. And those services need to be there when customers want them and customers need them, and we need to be able to respond to that. So it's about changing the way that we think, embedding it into our core, and really delivering those resilient outcomes for our customers.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you on the resilient culture piece. And I think actually it maybe extends beyond the boundaries of the organisation and almost a bit of a educational piece around personal resilience in customers and how they should actually think, you know, maybe having sort of concentration risk in one bank account, for example, or having a real reliance on certain elements, certain elements of a bank may not necessarily always be the right thing, because we have definitely got to a point where we expect it to be there at our fingertips within seconds, which obviously therefore is a very hard sort of availability quota for you to match.
It is, and I think the other place that I see it hopefully becoming part of the strategic conversation is around the table of our critical third parties, mm-hmm. as well, because for them, resilience should be at the core of what they do. You look at cloud providers, and you'd have conversations around, you know, what's your RTA, what's your RPO, and they say, no, we've got an availability metric, so we'll offer you 99.9% availability. And so it's how do we pivot our understanding of what that means and have confidence in it, but equally, how do we make sure that we're in trusted partnership conversations with our critical third parties that enables them to move forward in a resilient manner as well?
Yeah, and I think actually very nicely that brings you right back to a point you made at the start, is about getting them on the journey to understand it's not a case of if it will go down, it's accepting that it will go down, and it's about recovery rather than proving that they can be up 100% of the time, which we know isn't really feasible. Okay, well, thank you very much, Emma. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, and thank you for all of the insight that you've provided us. So yeah, thank you very much for attending.
Thank you for having me.
That's a wrap on our first ever episode of the Beyond Blue podcast. Thank you for listening. And if you'd like to know more about operational resilience, please visit our website, www.beyondblue.tech. Here, you'll find a number of insight pieces and deep dives into all things operational resilience. And if that's not enough, please feel free to reach out to us on LinkedIn or through our queries link on our website. Thanks again for listening, and see you soon.